smirked. "Although I am surprised I didn't see her last night." He tilted his head slightly. "She is well beyond what I ever thought I could court. If you can recall our earlier conversation about who you thought I was," I winked at him, and his eyes grew wide. "I told her I was staying here and had just gotten the job." I brought my voice to an almost silent whisper. Twerp looked shocked. "She served under Alexia, so I am not surprised you didn't see or hear her last night." "Can she hear us down here?" His eyes were as wide as the dish in his hands. "I don't think so, but maybe," I shrugged. "My place does have a good reputation," he stuttered, and his face almost matched his hair. "I wanted to see if I could arrange a private bath with her." I reached into my pouch and pulled out a small silver disc about the size of the nail on my thumb. "No need for that, son," he shook his head nervously when I tried to hand him my money. "You are celebrating quite an accomplishment. I'll have Salinta and Gaia prepare a hot bath in the room and let you know when it is ready. Consider it a gift, because you've been such a nice guest. You also remind me of myself at your age." He winked at me when he finished talking, and the color returned to his face. "Thank you, Turup. You've made my stay very enjoyable. I hoped I would not have to kill him. Can I get you anything else to eat? How about some wine? I want to make sure I stay on good terms with them." "That would be wonderful. Thank you." I pulled out the silver tab again, but he shook his head and loaded another tray up with eggs, bread, fruit, and a jug of wine. Then he yelled back into the kitchen for the servant girls to prepare the bath on the fourth floor and get me when it was ready. I made the short climb back upstairs and into the room. Iola Rothy's silver eyes widened when I presented the extra food and the jug of wine. She set in to the second meal, and I listened for the sounds of the serving girls hauling buckets of water up the stairs. Within a few minutes, they were at the task of filling the bathtub at the far end of the hall. "I am full. Please eat the rest." She smiled and nudged the plate toward the side of my table. It was three quarters full, but I wasn't particularly hungry. Still, tonight would be busy with the mission into Malik's estate, and there was no telling when I would eat again. "I hear the humans carrying buckets," she wrote on the journal page after I took a few bites of salty eggs and washed it down with a mouthful of dry wine. "The innkeeper and I came to an understanding. We will have a private bath." "We?" She raised a red copper eyebrow after she wrote the question. "Unless you would prefer to bathe alone." I suddenly felt like the boy in the stables again, and my cheeks began to burn. "No, I want to spend every possible second of the rest of my life with you and our daughter." She scrawled the words hastily. After I read the note, our eyes met, and she licked her full lips. I felt desire course through my body. I reminded myself that I was no longer a slave boy waiting for her orders, and I reached out my hand and ran it through the crimson hair at the back of her scalp. She gasped softly when my fingers made contact with her skin, and then moaned when I pulled her lips to my mouth. Her lips and tongue felt just as I remembered. They tasted sweet and felt so soft on my mouth that I battled between wanting to slowly savor them and needing to devour her. She bit my lower lip, and I was reminded of how dangerous my lover was. Before her teeth sank deep enough to draw blood, she reduced the pressure, and I felt her tongue caressing the inside of my mouth again. Our lips parted, and we each gasped. Then she slid into my lap and set my mind spinning with another assault of her lips. Her fingers roamed my chest and neck while our tongues danced. My hands grabbed onto her hips, and she began to rock against my lap. Footsteps moved toward the door, so we stopped kissing and parted quietly. Iolorothi slid to a corner of the room that was not visible from the doorway, and I had my hand on the doorknob as soon as the girl knocked. "Your bath is ready, sir. The girl was probably Turup's granddaughter. Thank you. I will be there shortly. We left extra buckets of water and soap, and the door to the latrine is unlocked." She smiled at me. "Thanks. I'll let you know if I need anything else." I handed her the silver piece I had tried to give Turup, and her eyes grew large. "Thank you, sir." She bowed at the waist and then fled down the stairs. Once I heard the girl reach the bottom floor, I listened for any other activity. The snores of the only other occupant of this floor continued, and the rest of the inn seemed to be empty, save for the innkeeper and his two girls. I beckoned to Iolorothi, and we walked silently to the bathing room. I heard no other disturbance, but I made a final glance down the hallway before shutting and locking the door. The room was 20 feet square, with four long wooden bathtubs arranged in a row. Two of the tubs were filled with steaming hot water, and there was a neat stack of towels, robes, soaps, bottles, and brushes laid atop stools placed nearby. The floor of the room was a polished red wood, and it sloped toward each of the four corners where brass drains were located. There were two large windows in the room, but thin white cotton curtains were drawn over them so that only soft light filtered through. Iolorothi silently walked around the bathtubs and then gestured to the only other door in the room. It was opened a crack, and she peered inside. Her mouth formed the word for toilet, and then she closed the door after she entered. I moved the thin curtain away from the side of the window and peered out at an angle. It was still mid-morning, perhaps a hair closer to lunchtime, and the street traffic moved normally through the avenues. There did not seem to be any discernible change to the pace of the inhabitants below. Rumors were that my old friends were not currently in the city, but there still should have been guards scouring the streets. They had planned on executing her this morning, and by now the Obarni must have noticed that I'd taken Iolorothi from her cell and put a corpse in her place. Even if every guard in the city were searching, there were hundreds of places to hide. I could keep us undiscovered until tonight. I still expected to see soldiers in the street. Had my generals grown so complacent that their commanders did not take their prisoners seriously? Whatever the reason, we just had to get the ovule tonight and be on the deck of the Sea Dog by morning. I took off my clothes, folded them, and set them on an empty spot on one of the wooden benches. Then I climbed into the bathtub. The water was extremely hot, but my body quickly grew used to the pain. I felt my muscles begin to relax, and the sensation climbed up my spine and temples. My mind calmed along with my body, and my eyes dared to close. I forgot all about the lack of soldiers in the streets or the execution that was supposed to be taking place this morning. Iolorothi came into the room and moved next to my bathtub. I felt my heart begin to hammer into my chest when she reached down and slipped off her dirt and blood-covered garments in one easy movement. Her body was beautiful. Even the grime from her stay in the dungeon could not hide the smoothness of her alabaster skin, the tone of her muscles, and her perfectly proportioned body. Her hair was longer than I remembered. It dripped past her waist like the fiery tail of a comet, and I wanted to rub my hands over every inch of her. She raised a pointed foot and stepped into the bathtub with me. The movement gave me the opportunity to see the wondrous play of muscles in her legs and stomach. She was spread before me for a brief second before her other leg joined her in the water, and she slid down into the bubbly depths. The tub was small and probably only meant for one person, so she perched on my shins. Her movement caused half a bucket of water to flow over the top of the tub, but it slid across the smooth wood floor and spiraled down the drain pipes. Iola Rothy lay back against the edge of the wood tub. Her knees stuck out of the water, but her skin was almost the same color as the bubbles, and it blended with the suds. I felt the bottoms of her feet rest on the top of my thighs, so I moved my hands from their resting place at the edge of the basin and began to rub the joints of her toes. She closed her eyes and purred at my touch. For a flash of a second, we were back in the stables, and she was commanding me to take off her boots and wash her feet. My hands continued to roam her feet and legs, rubbing her muscles until they relaxed against my fingers. Her body felt as tense as mine, and I wondered if she was nervous about our quest tonight. Her silver eyes were half open, and she smiled when she caught me looking at her. The beautiful elven leaned forward and took a bar of soap from the table. She dipped it into the water, lathered it between her fingers, and then rubbed the suds over my chest, shoulders, and armpits. The suds smelled of lemongrass and oatmeal. The feel of her hands dancing over my skin was delightful, and I couldn't keep a soft moan from escaping my lips. She scooted closer to me, and I crossed my legs under her so that she could wrap her own long legs around my hips. "If you can't even control your moans while I rub soap on your chest, you are really going to have a problem when I make love to you." Her sensual voice was just the faintest of whispers in my ear, and her teeth scraped against the lobe after she spoke the words. My heart skipped a beat at the sound of her admission, and my stiff penis throbbed against her stomach. She smiled slyly before reaching her left hand into the water between us. I felt her fingers brush against the tip of my member, rub down the shaft, and then push it against her. For a second, I thought she would raise her hips and slide me inside of her entrance, but then she squeezed along the base before releasing it with a sigh. She pushed herself backward to the far side of the tub and gestured with a finger for me to stand. I must have given her an exasperated look because she smirked at me and then waved her finger again. I untied my legs from hers and stood up out of the bathwater. The soapy bubbles cascaded down my body and into the tub. My erection was a few feet from Iola Rothy's mouth, and there was no mistaking the hunger in her silver eyes. She ran her tongue over her lips seductively. She grabbed the bar of soap again and lathered her hands. Then she set it back down and rested her fingers on my erection. I gasped at her touch, and I fought to keep from moaning at her caress. The soap made her grip slippery, and her slow rub across my erection, around my testicles, and between my thighs caused my legs to tremble with desire. She lathered more soap, and then rubbed down the rest of my legs, shins, and the front of my stomach. Each stroke of her fingers across my skin made my head spin, and my breath catch in my throat. I never dreamed that Iola Rothy would touch me in this way. We had made love so many times, but the adoration in her face and the complete focus she was giving to my pleasure was new and made my heart race. "Do you remember when you would wash my feet?" I understood her mouth make the movements more than I actually heard the almost silent whisper. "Yes." She smiled and then motioned for me to turn around. I followed her orders and heard her apply soap to a bristle brush. It lightly scratched my back as she cleaned, and while the sensation wasn't as pleasant as when she used her fingers, I still enjoyed the feel of it scraping against my skin. "Sit back down, and I'll wash your feet." I complied with her request and sat in the tub, raising my right foot above the water. She grasped it by the heel and worked her soapy fingers between my toes and along the ridge of my arches. It was agonizingly pleasurable, and I understood why Iola Rothi had made me rub her feet those many years ago. A few minutes of the cleansing massage passed, and she indicated that she wanted my other foot. I complied, and she repeated her administrations while I tried to stifle my moans of pleasure. It felt almost as good as sex, but I was eager for it to end so that I could begin my work on her delicious body. "Lie back and close your eyes," she commanded, and I was too relaxed and aroused to resist or even guess at what she had planned for me next. I did as she instructed and heard her open some of the jars arranged on the table by the tub. She made a few sniffing noises, and then I felt her fingertips brush my face. First, she rubbed the base of my throat, gingerly, and then she moved to my jawline and the knots that had formed there from weeks of stress. Soon she was rubbing my cheeks, temples, and forehead, the scent that filled my nose and the ease with which her fingers slipped across my skin led me to guess she had soap all over her fingers, so I didn't dare open my eyes. Finally, I felt her body lean over the tub and grab one of the full buckets of water. A trickle of the fresh liquid poured over my face, and I was washed clean. "Keep them closed," she whispered a second before her mouth made contact with my lips. Iola Rothi was straddling me again, and my hips unconsciously bucked underneath her in a quest to find her velvety passage. She bit my lip, and I let out a gasp before I kissed her passionately. She pulled away from my lips abruptly, and I moaned with sorrow. Then I felt her shift on top of me when she reached for another item on the table. I could smell the lavender on the air, and she rubbed some oil in my thick hair and used her nails to scratch my scalp. Her lips found mine again, and we explored each other's tongues with a building hot urgency that made the water start to feel cool. My hair was relatively short, but there was enough for her to grab, which she did as she broke off our kiss and then moved her mouth to my jawline. There she licked, nibbled, and sucked on my exposed throat until I couldn't hold back a moan of longing for her. "Keep your eyes shut." Her voice was warm honey, gently poured over my tongue. It made the hairs on my body stand up with exhilaration every time she risked a whisper to me. I felt her move to pick up the bucket again, and she slowly poured a stream of water over my hair, rubbed my scalp, and then repeated both steps. I heard her set the pail down again, and then she administered half a dozen slow kisses around my mouth and neck. Each touch of her lips had me twisting my head in an effort to meet her tongue, and when I was finally rewarded with her lips, I almost screamed with desire. Every part of my body ached for her, and I felt as if I would burst. "Now it is my turn." She broke the kiss again, and I opened my eyes. She stood from the bath, and the soapy water slid down her slick marble body effortlessly. My mouth watered when I gazed upon her wet form, and my head began to spin. I felt as if I wanted to wash, rub, lick, suck, and fuck her all at the same time, and never stop until the day that I died. I grabbed for the bar and lathered it between my hands. Then I reached out to touch Iola Rothi's hips with my fingers. She let out a small sigh of pleasure when our skin made contact, and I began to rub the soap over the outside of her thighs, then down to her knees, and finally on the inside of her legs. The dirt, dried blood, and grime covering her easily came off, and more smooth white skin was exposed. After a few minutes of careful scrubbing, Iola Rothi's legs and feet were clean. Then I looked at the parts of her body I had left unattended. When I made my way back to the lips of her entrance, I slowly ran a soapy finger along the edges. She let out a gasp of shock, and I looked to her face to see her expression. Her eyes were opened with pleasure, and she bit her lower lip. I slid my slick finger against her entrance again, and then did a few slow rubs of my thumb over the pink nub that was slightly above the tunnel. Her legs started to shake, and I teased my finger a quarter of its length into her before I pulled it out and grabbed more soap. The movement made her hiss, and I smiled at her while I lathered my hands again. Her stomach was next. I rubbed across her taut abdominal muscles, and her hands couldn't resist the urge to run along my own arms while I cleaned her. I was reaching upward at a slightly awkward angle, so I stood up as well so that I could have access to her breasts. Her nipples were erect, pink pieces of candy, and they seemed to get harder when I passed my soapy hands over them. She groaned, and her eyes closed when I started to massage the perfectly shaped orbs. Her right hand found the shaft of my penis and began to stroke and squeeze it in time with the tempo of my fingers on her breasts. I probably spent more time rubbing each breast than I had spent on the rest of her body, but her gasps of pleasure made me believe that she didn't mind the attention or the fact that we still stood. My penis felt unbelievably hard and big in her hands, but I knew that I couldn't let her continue to stroke me much longer, or I would orgasm. I added more soap to my palms and washed her armpits, shoulders, and hands. She stopped stroking me as I worked, and I almost couldn't handle the look of lust on her face. I gently touched her shoulders and turned her around so that she was standing with her back to me. She bent her lithe body forward slightly, and her rounded butt pushed my aching member against her. We both echoed a moan, and she rotated her hips back into me so that the base of my shaft rubbed against her wet entrance. All I needed to do was bend my knees, angle my erection forward a bit, and then stand. My right hand found her hip bone, and my left reached down around her to confirm that her entrance was ready for me. As soon as my fingers reached her opening, Iola Rothy let out a gasp of pleasure and simultaneously pushed herself down toward my fingers and into the base of my penis. I rubbed against her opening and then slipped a single finger into her. She was far wetter than I had imagined, and I knew there would be very little effort required for my member to travel its full length into her entrance. Yet we were still somewhat dirty, covered in soap, and I wanted to finish the first part of the bath before I set my mind upon making love to her. So I slid my finger out of her while she groaned in frustration and reached for the glass bottle of soap that was labeled for hair. Her long red mane took a lot of shampoo to lather, but I soon had most of the task finished and was rubbing her scalp. Iola Rothy hummed with pleasure and continued to push her ass back into my erection. Her soapy hair made our bodies slick, so her backward thrusts and twists were agonizingly wonderful. I was tempted with each soft moan she made to just bend over slightly and slide into her. The desire was maddening, and I could tell from her deep, labored breathing that she wanted me to take her right now. I reached down to one of the full buckets and rinsed her hair. Once it was clean of the soap, I helped her step out of the bath and then poured more of the clean water over her, washing away the last of the dirt and soap bubbles. I exited the wood tub, and she did the same for me. We didn't speak to each other. We did not need to. Her eyes were wild with lust, and my desire was clear. She reached for the tub with the fresh water in it and leaned over against the smooth, polished wood. Her back was pointed toward me. I could easily see the pink lips guarding her entrance. She looked over her left shoulder, and the movement sent some of her wet hair dangling into the bath. I wanted nothing more than to make a single deep thrust into her, to crush her body to me, and to impale her on my shaft while she screamed with pleasure. but I knew that even though she was dripping wet, I was still too large for that. Instead, I rubbed my tip against her welcoming lips and felt the tremors of her shaking body travel between us through the single intimate point of contact. Her silver eyes looked half insane. Her hips squirmed a bit, and she tried to push into me so that I would be forced to enter, but I pulled back slightly. "I love you," I said softly. "I love you. Please make love to me again, Kyair." I couldn't tease her any more. I wanted her as much as she wanted me. I pushed forward, and the head of my erection entered past her lips. I continued halfway into her tunnel before I pulled out a bit and proceeded slower. Her velvet walls squeezed my penis as firmly as the grip of her hand, but eventually I was buried fully in her, and we both let out a moan of pleasure. Or maybe it was a sigh of relief that we were together once again. Iola Rothi's body was quivering, and every breath out of her mouth was a whimper of pleasure. By the time I had pulled out most of my length and then slid back into her, the quivers had become full convulsions. Her tunnel clamped around my penis, and she fought through a deliciously long orgasm. I grabbed onto her hips and forced myself as deep as I could while she ripped gashes into the side of the tub with her nails, swung her wet hair forward, and tried to keep from screaming. "Yes," Iola Rothi hissed out in a long squeal of pleasure. At the moment, I didn't care if any O'Barney in the inn were spying on us. "Oh, oh, oh," she cried out again. She stood abruptly and pushed herself back against me. My hands left her hips to find a nipple and the nub of her entrance to caress. I realized that Iola Rothi was probably trying to escape the pleasure, but I was too strong for her, and she couldn't pry herself from my arms. She twisted and convulsed when I rubbed the new spots, and her orgasm seemed to have an additional climax to it. She moaned a series of long releases, and then finally seemed to relax. I stopped rubbing and just embraced her. The feeling of Iola Rothi's skin and hair against the full front of my body while I was deep inside of her was close to euphoria. I could have held her like this for hours. The best part was that I knew there was more to come. "I forgot how good you are," Iola Rothi gasped between ragged breaths that shook her shoulders. I released her, and she leaned over the wooden tub. Her entrance felt even damper than it had when I first entered her, so I withdrew again and then slowly thrust back into her passage. My hands again returned to her hips, and I repeated the motion at the same pace until she began to moan again. She looked over her shoulder at me, and her eyes told me how much she was enjoying it. I increased the pace of my thrusting and pulled on her hips to get an angle that would ensure that I slid against the backside of her wet, velvety walls. Her body was gorgeous, bent over before me, and I could feel the heat of her entrance begin to build after only a few more minutes of me deeply penetrating her. She whined, and her legs started to quake. I took my hands away from her hips and moved the right to cup her breast and pinch the nipple there. My left hand rubbed up and down her back. Then I grabbed onto her hair and pulled her so that her body bent backward like a bow against my deep thrusts into her entrance. Iola Rothi exploded into another orgasm as soon as I pulled her fiery hair. I had to let go of my grip on her mane after a few seconds of her thrashing. I was nervous that I would rip some of it out because she was convulsing so wildly. She drove back against me, but there was little more room for me to penetrate her any deeper. Then she pushed her face into the clean water of the tub she leaned over, and I could hear the diluted sound of her screaming with pleasure. This climax didn't last as long as her first one, but it was just as violent, and I was glad I was no longer the delicate human that I once had been. Even though my lover had not done anything to harm me, her pleasure was so raw and uninhibited that I guessed she might hit me with a stray limb. If I wasn't constantly under the power of the earth, such an accident could kill me. "I need you to fill me," she gasped after she had pulled her face from the water and her tremors had subsided. She looked over her shoulder at me again and licked her lips. Her words filled me with a heated purpose, and I slid my hands down her wet back and clutched at her slender hips again. There was no gentleness in my thrusts now. I pushed into her as fast, deep, and hard as I could. She clung to the side of the full bathtub, and I had to slow down my tempo after the wooden vessel began to buck from our combined strength. Her entrance was so incredibly tight around my shaft, so wonderfully wet, and her body felt like it fit against my skin perfectly. I couldn't tell how long I thrust myself into her body, but I felt the familiar sense of build-up begin in my lower stomach. She must have sensed it too, because she reached up her left hand off the edge of the tub and used it to stifle a scream of pleasure. "Can you?" I gasped and ran my nails over her pristinely smooth back. Iolorothi turned her head into my face. Her silver eyes were glowing wildly, and she bit down on the side of her hand to keep from screaming. A small stream of her blood was dripping down the side of her arm from where her teeth met her white skin. She nodded urgently, and the agreement from the beautiful elven woman was enough to send me over the edge. I pushed a last time into her entrance, as deep as I felt I could go without hurting her, and felt my body release. My seed poured out of me in a mixture of icy pain and fire. She screamed against her hand and bucked against me like an untamed horse. My orgasm didn't seem to stop. I felt myself contract over and over, filling her womb. Finally, I was able to relax, and we leaned against each other and the side of the wooden tub. "Amazing," she muttered breathily with exhaustion and pleasure. We spent a few more minutes catching our breath, and she spoke again. "You filled me with so much," she laughed slightly, "and you are still so hard inside of me. Could you go again?" I nodded, and she bit her bloody lip. "Ah," she sighed, "tempting, but we should finish this bath. The water is almost cold, and we have probably risked more than enough noise." She shifted her body, and my wet penis slipped out of her. She drifted back to the toilet room and returned shortly. She slid into the water with me, and we lay there for a few minutes, her head against my chest and my arms around her shoulders. My erection was still standing proudly, and even though my body was humming from the pleasure of our lovemaking, I knew that I could fuck her for the rest of the next week and not feel tired. Her hands did find my shaft, and she played with it for a few minutes before kissing me passionately again. "I need fresh clothes, something dark for tonight," she whispered in my ear after my mind stopped spinning from the kiss. "I can go buy something. I'll wear the robe back to our room. Pick up the new clothes and return quickly. There are still a handful of hours before sunset, and I wish to enjoy them with you in our room." She smiled at me, and one of her hands gently stroked my face while the other one attended to the tip of my penis. "If things go poorly tonight, this may be our last chance to love each other." I nodded at her words, but thought better than to reassure her. The plan was sound, and the only way we would fail was if one of my friends guessed I was in the city and would go after this magical device with Iolorothi. That was unlikely. Soon, we would be free of this place and reunited with our daughter. Then, our lives would truly begin. Chapter 32. Kyair. "Pretender!" Ternia's voice smacked me from my memory violently, and I jumped in surprise. "What did you ask?" I squirmed back into my seat on the pillow and tried to hide my erection. The memory of making love to Iola Rothy was wonderful, but it had come at a very awkward moment, and I couldn't quite place what had happened in the last few minutes. The Empress, Disanti, and Virnine stared at me with wide-eyed shock. I didn't know how long the recollection had captivated me, or if I had spoken or moaned, but based on their faces, I feared I had revealed exactly what I had dreamed of. Ternia's blue eyes glared at me for a few moments before she spoke. I asked what conditions you had. Then you sat there and stared at the floor. My mind wandered. I apologize. I am eager to bring this to a close, Pretender. Tell me what you want, and then give me your testimony. She seemed to relax a bit, but her two guards still eyed me skeptically. My mind raced, and I struggled to remember what I had intended to ask. The memories meshed with the feeling of bathing with Iola Rothy, but once I recalled the earlier part of the memory with my lover, I felt more confident about my plan, though it was still incredibly risky. You said that I will be given comforts and pleasure for the remainder of our journey? Yes, she confirmed. What does that include? A larger tent, new clothes, as much food as you want, and regular baths. I could even allow the removal of your shackles, the hawk-featured woman said. How about companionship every night? I could arrange a nightly massage, but I won't force any of my people to fuck you, Pretender, she shook her head. I am not inferring that one of your women fucks me. Then, her word hung in the air for a few seconds before I saw the realization dawn on her face. You said you would torture and execute her if I confirmed your suspicions, I said. Yes, that is my intention. She nodded slowly, and I couldn't read her expression. Give her to me for the duration of our trip. After I am executed, you can do what you will with her. No, Talaxthi realized that we were speaking about her and seethed the word. I would rather die. The Empress wasn't begging or demanding, but her eyes were molten fire and glared at me with the heat of a dozen suns. If only everyone could choose their fate, Talaxthi. I know my brother would have preferred to die in a nobler way. Ternia turned back to me, and our eyes met for a few seconds. I wonder at your motivation, she said at last. I am attracted to their kind. I find her beautiful, even though she hates me. The knowledge that she finds me disgusting will add some spice to our fucking. The words were distasteful in my mouth, but they needed to be said to convince Ternia. Part of it was true. I did find Talaxthi beautiful, and she did hate me, but I would not force a woman into sex. I doubt I will be able to let you possess her after I deliver you to the council, so I will only commit to keeping her alive until then. But you can ask them? Yes, but I doubt they will want to give you any of the comforts I have promised. I will ask. She shook her head slowly. I do not know if you are ill in the mind or diabolical in your heart. I do know that you are not the real Kyair, by any stretch of the imagination. The betrayer loathed the elvens and would have had nothing to do with their women. I shrugged my shoulders and turned to the Empress. She stared straight ahead into the blank canvas of the tent and did not make eye contact with me. Virnine's ruby eyes met mine, and I wondered if she guessed at my intentions. What of Disanti, Virnine, and the Empress's servants? Will they be free to go, as you promised? I wanted to ensure Virnine would live through this ordeal. I said Disanti could leave safely if Talaxthi cooperated. Ternia turned to the Empress, and the elven woman gave a slight nod, but didn't adjust her gaze. If Virnine and these servants had no part in my brother's murder, then they may leave as well. We can determine that after the Empress gives you the information you want, and you tell me of my brother. Is there anything else? Yes, the Empress has some mastker. As soon as the words left my mouth, the three O'Barney women leaned slightly. She does. Ternia raised a dark blonde eyebrow and regarded Talaxthi. Her cool demeanor seemed to crack for a half a second. A few pounds. I would like to enjoy it with you on the night before we leave this world. I will gladly agree to that, she said to me, without looking in my direction. Where do you keep the mastker, bitch? Ternia asked Talaxthi. The Empress turned to one of her servants and nodded. The man rushed out through the rear curtain, and I assumed he would produce the intoxicating meat shortly. What else? Ternia looked back at me. That is all. I shrugged again and forced my face to make a dumb smile. Fine. She turned to the Empress. Tell this pretender what he thinks he needs to know. If you try to withhold anything, I'll have Dissanti butchered in front of you. The jade-haired woman aimed her emerald eyes at Ternia and bit her lower lip with frustration. She didn't seem afraid, just annoyed. I will comply, if it means any of my kin can be spared, Talaxthi said. The male servant came from the back of the tent, carrying a large cedar chest. He walked to his Empress, but she indicated with a nod of her head to place the treasure before Ternia. This is illegal for you to possess, Talaxthi. Ternia shook her head when the elven set down the chest. Open it, she commanded, and the man did so with great reverence. I couldn't see because of the angle of the lid, but I did smell the euphoric meat drift through the air. The two women next to Ternia had mirrored expressions of awe and desire plain on their pretty faces. Their leader remained composed, but I guessed from the widening of her pupils that she desired the flesh as much as her companions. Perhaps I owe you a few favors, pretender. It is possible that I would have never discovered this bounty without you. She made a small smile, closed the chest, and then turned slightly to the Empress. Begin now. Talaxthi exhaled and then faced me. Nyarothi's journals are the main source of this information, since Iolarothi left no written record. She addressed Ternia. The O'Barney were never interested in documenting any of their past, so most of what happened following our war was lost. Our sclads tell the tales of the betrayer, and they are common knowledge now. I was surprised Ternia even bothered to defend herself against Talaxthi. 5,000 years can corrupt stories, but that is another argument. The Empress turned her eyes back to me. I was surprised at the control she had over her emotions, but Talaxthi had not risen to lead the elven people by displaying her feelings openly. Still, death loomed over her shoulder, and I was sure she felt great despair in spite of her apparent composure. In these journals, Nyarothi documented most of the war efforts and the various strategies her sister employed. The Empress paused for a moment and then glanced back to Dissanti before continuing. Nyarothi escaped after the destroyer's armies defeated the dragons. She led a few hundred refugees away from the battle and to the deserts of Green Solo. Eventually, she settled there and occupied herself with saving our race from the humans. Iolarothi also survived and found her sister 10 or 12 years after the war. You don't know the exact date? I asked. The detail probably didn't matter in the long run, but I thought it odd that Talaxthi's records were not dated correctly. No. I don't have all of her journals, unfortunately. Many have been lost throughout the years or been rewritten by our elders. Sounds like your written history is not much better than our spoken word, Ternia mocked. Our kind has endured thousands of years of oppression from your people. You've hunted our skulls, denied us freedoms, and burned thousands of our temples. We would still have the documents if not for your kind. The Empress said the words softly, and Ternia's mocking smile faded. Hunted skulls? The term sounded odd to me. I could understand killing elvens, but why make sport of their bones? The group of elvens and O'Barney turned to me with a combined look of puzzlement. Even the elven servants gazed upon me as if I was asking them what color the blue sky was. The Empress tilted her head, and her bronze hair fell down to one side of her neck like a waterfall. The O'Barney use our skulls to make ovules, she stated, as if explaining a basic fact of life to a child. Why? Her explanation didn't make sense to me. That is how they are created. Desanti's emerald eyes bored into mine with a strange intensity. That is the only way? I recalled a memory of molten heat covering my head and endless screams. It made my skin crawl and my heart began to race. Yes, it is the only way, and ovules are the only objects that power the radicals, Desanti said. You did not know this? No, I sighed and shook my head. Why did you ever think that your people could be free? I asked Talaxthi. The O'Barney live too long. They need access to other worlds, or they will destroy each other with overpopulation. Is it so foolish to want freedom for your people, even if the odds against you are unmeasurable? Her amber eyes narrowed. You know the answer. It is not our purpose to destroy the elvens, Pretender. My brother and I were the loudest voices that demanded they be allowed to have this world. They earned it from victory at the games, Ternia said. That is why I am so outraged by Talaxthi's betrayal. The O'Barney leader seethed, and the tension in the already electric air seemed to come close to a boil. I can understand your anger. I had to calm down the situation, at least until the Empress told me what I needed to know. My father and brother were murdered while I watched. Then you are a coward. You should have defended them. Her blue eyes cracked for a second, maybe only a part of a second, and I could see the terrible pain behind them. I was only a human. I wanted to die with them, but their murderer thought torture was a better punishment. I finally escaped, and then set out on the path of revenge. Ternia recovered from her emotions by the time I finished speaking, and she turned her attention back to the Empress. Then the sharp-featured woman motioned with a twisting finger that she wished the elven to continue. Accompanying Iola Rothi was a child. The writings describe her as fiercely intelligent and curious. The girl was a half-breed, Talaxthi said. Human and elven? Ternia asked. The anger was gone from her voice, and she seemed genuinely curious. So the journals say. Then your writings are wrong, the tall O'Barney woman said. I've been alive for 72 years and never heard of such a thing. Our kind cannot make children with yours. Nya Rothi's writings indicate that she believed as you did. Her sister claimed that the child was Kyair's. The girl confirmed the story. The betrayer was captured after the war. Even if he had a child, it wouldn't have been with one of your whores. The man was only interested in taking Shlara from Malak, Ternia stated factually. I wanted to scream at her to shut her fucking mouth, but held back my rage. There was nothing good that could come from me telling the woman any sort of truth. Is there more? I asked. I kept my voice at a whisper. Nya Rothi wrote that they only stayed with her for a single night. Iolorothi believed that she was being followed by warriors from Shlara or Alexia's army. The child asked her mother to sketch her father's face. The writing in the journals confirmed that there were apparent similarities between the human man's face and the child that Iolorothi claimed was her daughter. Was the child named in the writings? My heart leaped into my chest, and the edges of my vision began to cloud. No, she shook her head, and the breath left my body with a cold rush of defeat. I didn't know what I expected, but I wished there had been at least a name, maybe even a better description of the girl, something, anything that could have given me hope that I would know her better. But even this small scrap was worth my trouble. I remembered being in Nyarothi's home, and the canvas that her daughters had knocked over when they fled. I wish I would have known that my lover created the drawing for our daughter to view. Why had the girl not taken it with her? Is there anything else? My voice cracked, and I blinked away tears. Fuck. I didn't want any weakness to show in front of these women, but my emotions were a flooding river in my chest. They left the next morning. Iolorothi refused to tell her sister their destination. She was convinced that it would put them all at risk. I recalled my earlier memory. Iolorothi had told me that our daughter went through the radical and was waiting for her mother on the other side. This information from Talaxthi did not give any hints I could use to help confirm her location, or even if the girl was still alive. There is one more part you might find interesting. A few days after Iolorothi left, her spies reported that a single traveler had entered the tavern in the settlement. "Dead Flats," I said. Talaxthi nodded at the name I gave for the small salt city, not revealing any surprise that I remembered it. She knew who I was. There were Obarni stationed in this town. Nyarothi always thought their presence strange, and she documented the dates she saw them replaced with fresh troops. They were posted at the city for some reason, but didn't seem to be investigating any elven presence there. In fact, Nyarothi suspected that the Obarni actually knew she was operating in Dead Flats, but didn't care. They made a point to speak to every stranger that ever entered the city. On this particular night, a few days after her sister visited, Nyarothi had the epiphany that Kyair was still alive and was being hunted by his army. Sure enough, this new arrival was the Destroyer, and the Obarni in the city attempted to capture him. Lies. He was caught immediately after he killed Shlara. The man was dead. One of Ternia's women spoke suddenly, and her leader silenced her with a cutting glare. Nyarothi saved Kyair from being captured, and then brought him back to her home. She wrote that she couldn't kill the father of the child she had met, though the man deserved to die 100,000 torturous deaths. Talaxthi's eyes narrowed at me, and I knew that she agreed with her ancestor. I nodded and tried to fight against the agony in my stomach. I asked myself why Nyarothi hadn't told me of my daughter, but the answer was obvious. The woman hated me. I recalled the time I spent in her home and the feeling of my hand around her throat. I had almost killed my lover's sister. It was odd to think that if I had squeezed just a little harder for a few more seconds, then Talaxthi would not be sitting here right now. But if there was no Talaxthi, there would have been no Nadia. The Duchess would not have awoken me. I would not be sitting here right now, hearing the story of how close I came to finding the woman that I loved and the child she had created with me. In some ways, their invasion of this world was my fault. Then I recalled that Nyarothi already had two girl children. I didn't know if the Empress and Fahalda were descended from them or another child of Iolorothi's sister. It sounds like your tale has come to an end, Talaxthi, Ternia said. She turned her head to me and spoke with her usual calmness. I can't imagine you are satisfied with this information. Any knowledge can be priceless when the topic is most important, I said. She led me to believe that there was more, but perhaps I was a fool to think so. You are most certainly a fool. No one claims to be the betrayer unless they wish to die. Is there anything more you can tell me? I asked Talaxthi again. My friends believed that spirits of their dead family and lovers protected them, so I said a silent prayer to them. No, Talaxthi said flatly, and I knew she spoke the truth. Will you release my people now? She asked Ternia. The two women stared at each other for a silent half-minute before the Obarni clan leader answered. How will I ensure that you cooperate as the pretender's concubine? Talaxthi's jaw clenched, and she inhaled slowly. I could hear her heart pounding in her chest, but for a quarter of a minute she didn't say anything. Finally, she smiled slightly and spoke. You have not heard this man's conviction of me yet. You told me that you would let Dissanti leave. Please show mercy on my people, and I will gladly fulfill whatever you ask of me. You are right, Talaxthi. I have not heard the pretender's story. She turned to me. What do you think? Should I let Dissanti leave, or should we keep her around so that the Empress bitch has incentive to wet your dick enthusiastically? Perhaps Ternia suspected that I requested the elven woman's presence for something other than sexual needs. Maybe she thought that I had a desire to escape or prevent the Empress from being put to death. I do not care. I shrugged my shoulders and let out an easy breath. I am also at your mercy, as I only have a few more weeks of life before I am delivered to your council. If she doesn't satisfy me, I'll just tell you I am done, and you can begin the torture. She is proud, and said earlier that she would prefer death over my bed. But I am a good lover. Once she feels my member between her legs, she will prefer me fucking her to torture. Ternia nodded at my words, but the Empress, Virnine, and even the aloof Dissanti glared at me. Fine. I will make a decision after you speak of my brother, Pretender. Perhaps it is best to start at the beginning. I had already planned what I would say to the group, so the words came easily. A group of humans awoke me from a long slumber. I was in a radical. My memory was lost, and I did not recall my name. I had debated telling Ternia of the writing Malik left for me on the stone bed, but I decided it would just anger her. These humans knew nothing of the Sklad legends. Their world was being invaded by monsters that called themselves ancients, and they had writings of someone named the Obarni that had once defeated them. Idiots, one of Ternia's women shook her head. Talaxthi used the name to inspire fear in the native people of this world. She hoped that this would cause less conflict, but the humans resisted her conquests, so a short war broke out. The people that woke me thought I could save them from the elvens, and they took me back to their castle. One of the men in the group was named Ieren. Yes, Ternia said. I expected her to say more, but when she didn't, I reasoned that she knew the tall man's side of my story, and I would have to adjust what I was going to say slightly. Some of my memories were beginning to return, and I recalled my past. I knew my name was Kyair, and I had memories of leading an army against the elvens. While I was in the castle, a group of them attacked, kidnapped the king's daughter, and I followed them. While I was away from the city, one of Talaxthi's generals conquered it. When I returned, I attempted to rescue my human friends, but I was also captured by Alatoricht and ended up meeting the Empress as a prisoner. Talaxthi, like you, assumed I was a pretender and just wanted me to leave this world, since it was illegal for her to kill me. Ternia nodded. Her eyes were set upon me with a ferocity that made me wonder if she believed me. Then Caneth came.